TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Yastel Yamada and the Skilled Veterans Corps for Fukushima. Only 4 weeks after the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster, an extraordinary offer was made by veteran workers from Fukushima and by engineers and technicians from other branches of industry. They are willing to work in the most dangerous areas of the damaged reactor vessels and nuclear fuel pools to protect younger workers from the high radiation doses. They say they are elders, are no longer having children, and might die before some of the long latency cancers would make them seriously ill. They formed an organization, the Skilled Veterans Corps for Fukushima, SVCF, in order to better negotiate with the Japanese government and with the owner and operator of Fukushima Daiichi, TEPCO. The group has since grown to over 700. However, as of August 2012, they have not been permitted to work at Fukushima Daiichi. The Japanese government says you can work if TEPCO accepts you, and TEPCO says we have no room for you, even though 3,000 people work at the accident site every day. The veterans formed a small delegation to inspect the plant, and Yastel Yamada was one of those allowed to enter Fukushima Daiichi in July 2012. At that same time, the Skilled Veterans Corps decided to send Mr. Yamada to the U.S. He is the SVCF co-founder and president and worked on environmental and waste issues in steel plants before retiring. The SVCF has two primary goals. One is to inform the U.S. public about the very serious problems of the cleanup at the plant and the timeline of decades until they can possibly be resolved. And secondly, to appeal to the U.S. government to put pressure on the Japanese government to convince TEPCO to allow the skilled veterans to work in the cleanup so the most dangerous tasks can be approached as soon as possible. Yamada, who is 73, landed in San Francisco at the end of July 2012, and, before going east to its Chicago and Washington, D.C., made two Northern California stops, and that is where I met and recorded him. Before Yamada took the stage, the first image of his presentation was up on the screen. It said, Facts and Tasks at Fukushima Daiichi, Skilled Veterans Corps for Fukushima. Here's Yastel Yamada.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman, and all of you coming here to hear me speak. Now, today, I'd like to talk facts and tasks at Fukushima Daiichi. The reason why I say facts is that there are so many information. You must be overloaded, and there are so many confusions and so many scattered facts, but we have to have the overview, what is the real problem at the site. This is my first point to talk today. This is the Unit 4 building, which you have had a serious problem there. But now you see that some people are working on the floor. It means this building is not very much contaminated than other units. Now, this photograph showed the damaged crane. Now they are constructing the overhang new structure to take out the spent fuel from the pool.
For most of us sitting in the audience that night, that photo was the first bad surprise. Unit 4 is not as seriously damaged as the other units. Nevertheless, this is where the cleanup is focused. It turns out, according to Yamada, that Units 1, 2, and 3 are so highly radioactive that they cannot yet be approached by human beings, and even robots failed. From the slide shown by Yamada, the spent fuel pool at Unit 4 is still filled with water, which keeps the fuel rods cool and contains the radiation. However, the 1,535 fuel rods in the Unit 4 pool cannot be removed because the enormous crane, capable of lifting 100-ton casks out of the pool for transfer to dry storage, is broken and needs to be replaced. Back to Yamada with the number of fuel rods in Unit 4 and also radiation data in millisieverts for Units 1 and 2 that remain too dangerous to be approached.
Unit 4 contains 1535 spent fuel units, but the building has been already reinforced after the earthquake. I was in this building just July. It means that this contamination level is much less than other units. And if you see the Unit 3, damage is very serious, and contamination inside of the building is much more serious than Unit 4. For example, the contamination level in Unit 1 is 25 to 13,000 millisievert per hour, and Unit 2 is 5 to 73,000 millisievert per hour, and Unit 4 is much, much less. Therefore, the Unit 1, 2, and 3, those buildings are not reinforced. Therefore, if you had strong earthquake, the breakage can take place much easier in Units 1, 2, and 3.
The next photo from the presentation by Yamada, who is volunteering to work in the most dangerous parts of Fukushima Daiichi, is the temporary seawall. As you may remember, the tsunami following the March 2011 earthquake topped and destroyed the seawall that was built to protect the nuclear power plants from the ocean. This image shows not a constructed and anchored wall, but a row of large rocks, piled only 15 feet high, with an elevation of only 30 feet above sea level. And TEPCO has no plans to build a permanent seawall for another 40 or 50 years. Yamada gave the height of the seawall in meters.
Now, this just pile of stone, this is the present seawall, having the height of the 5 meters on the ground of 10 meters over sea. This is clearly temporary seawall. But TEPCO doesn't have the plan to install the permanent seawall in their mid-term and long-term plan. Means 40, 50 years, they may use this seawall. Do you see that this seawall can endure? Incredible.
The next photo shows a type of red flexible hose used in firefighting. At the destroyed nuclear power plant, this hose carries cooling water that is laced with cesium-137 to a water processing unit that attempts to extract the cesium and then back inside a system of over 2.5 miles of pipes. That image made apparent that, unlike at Chernobyl, the cooling has to continue for decades until all the fuel left in the spent fuel storage pools and inside the damaged reactor vessels is removed. Yamada is very concerned about the poor quality of the hose and the length of time it will be in use.
This is the hose conducting the cooling water from the vessel and removing the cesium-137 and then return to the vessel again. But such a horse is not allowed in a normal industrial plant. That's a common sense rule. And you can see that such a horse, only firefighting, not more. But there is no plan to change this horse to the steel pipe. Now this horse is running more than 2.5 miles. Future plan is to pump up the water within the building and cool the vessel. But as I said, the contamination in unit 1, 2, 3 are serious, and no one knows when this power pipe can be installed. As far as plan is concerned, it would be 5 years later, but in the meantime, we have to use this very seriously weak horses.
In the steel plant where Yamada worked before he retired, such a hose, as he had photographed on the site of Fukushima Daiichi, would never pass inspection. Yet at Fukushima, they are in use for possibly 5 years for the essential cooling system that is needed to keep the nuclear fuel from overheating, burning, or exploding. Yamada then went on to describe the task of fuel removal from the reactor vessels. What was really interesting about this part of his presentation was the appearance of diagrams from the Three Mile Island accident in Pennsylvania in 1979. Even though it was denied immediately after the accident, TMI did have a partial meltdown. However, the molten fuel inside the reactor vessel, we are told, did not breach the containment at TMI. It is not yet clear if the vessels at Fukushima Daiichi have been breached at the bottom. Even for the least radioactive Unit 4, TEPCO is providing estimates only. The reactor vessel of Unit 4 is leaking, but it is unclear where exactly. According to Yamada, the water level in the Unit 4 reactor vessel is only 10 inches high. That's out of a total height of 120 feet. The strategy is to find all the leaks and plug them, then fill the vessel with water and carefully remove the molten fuel. Since the removal is done by lowering containers into the water-filled fuel pool or reactor vessel, there needs to be space for the cask to be lowered and for robot arms to pick up the fuel underwater and set it into the casks that will then be lifted out. TEPCO claims that the molten fuel has slumped down to a 65-inch mound. Here's Yamada's comparison between the status of the reactor vessel at Fukushima and Three Mile Island.
This is the final results in Three Mile Island. You can see that the fuel has been damaged but remained in the reaction pressure vessel. But in case of Fukushima, the fuel has molten down and eroded the concrete. And now TEPCO says that there is some room. And they say this depth is 65 centimeters, 25 inch. But this is simulation. No one have seen inside. Yeah. Therefore, the shape of the debris is not known. This is just an assumption. And furthermore, cement concrete is not like us steel. It's a mixture of the stones, sand, and cement. Therefore, the vessel bottom might be eroded or broken. Now I'm talking about the spent fuel removal. The reason why spent fuel should be removed is, of course, to avoid the crisis, but furthermore, to remove the fuel debris from the vessel, you have to have this space inside. At this moment, there is almost no space to take out debris and keep it in the pool. Therefore, spent fuel pool removal is very serious, important work, and spent fuel shall be inserted into the cask in the water. In the water is very important. Then this cask, having the weight more than 100 tons, will be picked up and loaded on the huge truck on the ground and transported to storage area.
Given all the work that needs to be done before the fuel can be reached, Yamada says that TEPCO expects that it will take at least 10 years until removal can even begin. You are listening to a synopsis of a report by Yastel Yamada. He's president of the Skilled Veterans Corps for Fukushima, the SVCF, a 700-member-strong organization of retired engineers and construction workers that formed right after the Fukushima Daiichi accident in March 2011. They are offering to work in the most dangerous areas of the power plant to protect young workers by keeping their radiation levels down. To this day, TEPCO, the owner-operator of Fukushima Daiichi, has not allowed the veterans to work on site. Mr. Yamada came to the U.S. in late July 2012 to inform us of the serious state of the cleanup effort and ask us and you to lobby the U.S. government to put pressure on the Japanese government to make it possible for them to work. I recorded Yamada in Ukiah, Northern California, on July 30th. I'm paraphrasing some of what he said that night because we found him sometimes a little hard to understand. On the other hand, I want you to hear the voice and get a personal impression of this dedicated and generous man, and through him, the other members of the SVCF. They are willing to risk their lives to protect younger workers, and ultimately all of us. If another earthquake or tsunami were to strike the area of Fukushima Daiichi, before the cleanup is completed, the unprotected fuel left in the broken-down reactor vessels and storage pools will create a catastrophe much larger than the original accident. In fact, only in April of this year, top spent fuel pools expert Mr. Robert Alvarez, former Deputy Assistant Secretary for National Security and the Environment at the U.S. Department of Energy, said that, quote, "The unit number 4 fuel pool is about 100 feet above ground, is significantly damaged, and is exposed to the open elements. If an earthquake or other event were to cause this pool to drain, this could result in a catastrophic radiological fire involving nearly 10 times the amount of cesium-137 released by the Chernobyl accident," end quote. The link to the full statement is on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Alvarez was interviewed by Akio Matsumura, who also recorded the opinion of the former Japanese ambassador to Switzerland. Mr. Murata put it even more urgently. He's appealing to the United Nations to convene a nuclear security summit regarding the global risks emanating from the huge amounts of irradiated fuel on the Fukushima site, in addition to the 1,500-plus fuel rods in Unit 4. There are another 6,375 fuel assemblies in the common fuel pool, only 50 meters from Unit 4. Back to Mr. Yamada. In the 14 months since their original request to be allowed to work on the cleanup, the veterans have analyzed the ongoing efforts and have become deeply concerned with the shortcuts taken and the lack of quality work. You already heard about the inadequate seawall and the makeshift pipes that are used to pump and filter the cooling water. The veterans of the SVCF have begun to wonder why quality of work, planning, and coordination are so poor, and they have come up with several very interesting and plausible explanations. They ask why TEPCO, an energy company that has already been proven negligent, should supervise a cleanup in which they, as a corporation, have no expertise. They say that the profit motive of all prime contractors and subcontractors and sub-subcontractors involved in the cleanup is a hindrance in doing quality work and in fairly assessing the radiation risks to workers. Yamada raised these and other issues in the second part of his talk and ultimately asked for international supervision and quality control of the cleanup and participation in the work. The skilled veterans have enough expertise among them to recognize the global danger the Fukushima Daiichi disaster site poses, and they hope that peoples worldwide will demand that an international effort be started immediately. Back to Yasutaro Yamada's presentation. It became obvious that the skilled veterans had really done their homework. In their attempts to convince TEPCO to allow them to work, they came up with a comparison of the time it took to begin fuel removal, 5 years at TMI, and an estimated 10 years at Fukushima Daiichi, and of the radiation doses to cleanup workers at TMI and the forecast doses for Fukushima. The comparison between the doses received by TMI cleanup workers and estimated for the Fukushima Daiichi workers are striking. At TMI, the annual doses were 400 person-rem during the accident in 1979. They fell for the next 2 years and then started rising as the fuel removal began, with a high of almost 1,000 rem in 1987. Yamada says that that is normal because people begin working closely to the fuel. TEPCO's comparison chart for anticipated radiation at Fukushima Daiichi shows an unrealistic, ever-decreasing bar graph.
Now I'm talking about the radiation doses of Three Mile Island. Just after the accident, there was some explosion, and then some 3-4 years it decreases, but then again during the fuel renewal you had a much more explosion. That's quite normal. I mean that, as you can imagine, that the people, workers, should work very close to the fuel. Now we have to consider what will be in Fukushima. This is a TEPCO's estimation. They estimated only 5 years from now, and they have calculated, and they say, now, last year, they have needed such number of workers, but now the future necessity is much less. But after 10 years, when the debris removal would be started, then the exposure to the radiation must be serious. But no one talk about that.
That was Mr. Yasutaro Yamada, president of the Skilled Veterans Corps for Fukushima, the SVCF, an organization of over 700 retired construction and engineering professionals. Since the Fukushima accident, they have offered to work in the most dangerous areas of the destroyed nuclear power plant in order to speed up the work and protect young workers from radiation. TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, has, as of this time, 14 months into their efforts, refused to accept their services. You can find a link to the SVCF website on TUC Radio's website. Please come back for the second part of this program. You will hear Mr. Yamada give a chilling review of clear incompetence on the part of TEPCO and the many layers of uncoordinated subcontractors. The skilled veterans are now calling for TEPCO to be replaced with an international project team and, following the model of TMI, make use of worldwide expertise. Yamada is calling for oversight and quality control and strict protection of the workers. All this and more details coming up in the next program by TUC Radio. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can also get a one-hour recording or a film on DVD. TUC Radio has moved to Northern California. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. You can get information on how to order an audio CD or a film of Yastel Yamada by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD or DVD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654. For information on how to order, you can get your CD or DVD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. TUC Radio takes its name from an aeronautical term. Time of useful consciousness is the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. The brief moment in which a pilot may save the plane. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.